Hi, listeners. This is the Nikki Lee Show. The last episode, we talked about microaggression behind mask wearing. In today's episode, we're going to dive into the dynamics of microaggression under the background of COVID-19 pandemic. In Los Angeles, a child in San Fernando Valley was physically assaulted at his middle school and accused of having the coronavirus simply because he is AAPI. On a San Francisco street, a young AAPI woman was spat upon and blamed for bringing the coronavirus to the U.S. Young people as well as adults and seniors in California fear being perceived as the source or carrier of the disease. This is a section of Coronavirus Anti-AAPI Racism Incident Report. This report center, which launched on March the 19th, is held by Asian Pacific Planning and Policy Council, along with Chinese for Affirmative Action, and aim to track anti-Asian harassment. With nearly 3 million cases confirmed in a few months, the whole world is under the nightmare of COVID-19, and the fact that the origin of this virus can probably be traced back to China has pushed Asians into a hard time. As the hatred towards the Asian community continues to grow, we saw many Asian model minority reach out and speak for the life of the whole community. The one that caught my attention was an op-ed written by John Cho, who is one of the most famous Asian American actors in Hollywood movies. The article is titled, "Coronavirus Reminds Asian Americans Like Me That Our Belonging Is Conditional." Even though I'm not an Asian American, but as a Chinese student, I do relate to this article when he mentioned that he grew up with his parents encouraging him to watch as much as television as possible in order to speak and act like the natives. It is the same thing when I am encouraged to participate in events held by my university or even community. The purpose is to assimilate. It is the hope that race will not disadvantage us. However, just as he already mentioned in the title, the pandemic is reminding us that our belonging is conditional. One moment, we are Americans. Next, we are all foreigners who brought the virus here. While John Cho is feeling a loss of belonging to his home country, America, I, who still consider myself Chinese, has no problem with my belonging. However, still, this pandemic made me think about the dynamic of all the microaggression that happened to us. When I go back to Darren Wensu's book, Microaggressions and Marginality, Manifestation, Dynamics, and Impact, the book classifies the major psychological dilemmas or dynamics created by microaggressions into, first, the clash of realities between the dominant group and socially devalued group members. Second, the invisibility of unintentional bias and discrimination. And the third, the perceived minimal harm of microaggressions. Now, let's address these dynamics to this COVID-19 background. In my opinion, the model for dominant group and socially devalued group in COVID-19's case will be a little bit complicated. It is not simply white people as the dominant group, and Asian communities as the socially devalued group. Here, I would argue that our dominant group would be individuals that are not Chinese, whose lives are affected by COVID-19, and the socially devalued group would be anyone who has a Chinese-looking appearance. You may wonder why I use Chinese-looking people instead of just Asian communities. The reason for that is because there exist situations that Asian people discriminate against Asian people. For example, DW, a Germany news website, reported an article titled "Chinese-looking Indians targeted in racist attacks." The article mentioned Indians who were from northeastern states that border China were attacked by other Indians because of COVID-19. After defining our dominant group and socially devalued group, let's go back to the first point under the dynamics. In general, as the book also mentions, mainstream groups hold the ability to define reality through the tools of education, mass media, and social institutions. For example, let's listen to this typical message during COVID-19 pandemic. The United States will be powerfully supporting those industries, like airlines and others, that are particularly affected by the Chinese virus. We will be stronger than ever before. This is a tweet from US President Donald Trump. Even though soon after this tweet, the director of the CDC condemned Trump's tweet and agreed that it was absolutely wrong for President Trump to label the COVID-19 as the Chinese virus. The Trump administration still denied calling COVID-19 the Chinese virus as a mistake. It's not racist at all. It comes from China, that's why. This is how Trump explained his use of Chinese virus. The White House, besides, even used other illnesses, like the Ebola virus, that had been named after places to criticize the media's fake outrage. Donald Trump and his administration are definitely one of the leaders for mainstream groups. Their speech, response, action towards COVID-19 shapes and influences on the speech, response, and action within the whole dominant group. The problem here is not that the notion of never call COVID-19 as Chinese virus is a denial to the origin of the virus, but the word Chinese virus itself is filling up the hatred and fear against the socially devalued group. Just like a tweet by a person named The Alternative African said, I'd say this president and his cohorts only exposed the racism and xenophobia that was already here. He just gave those people permission to openly express it. And in fact, this person is absolutely right. After Trump claimed Chinese virus is not racist, the word upgrades into Kung Flu. The use of Chinese virus was no longer simply to define the origin of the virus, but as an excuse to accuse China for taking the full responsibility of this COVID-19 pandemic. On the other hand, when the leading groups permit all these microaggressive words and the actions from the socially devalued group that attempt to protest or point out the offensiveness of the terms will be marked as being oversensitive or paranoid. The virus doesn't have a nationality, but it started in China. Let's remember, coronavirus is not an Asian virus, it's a human virus. Then what about the Spanish flu? Or the Russian flu. It's not the Chinese virus. It's a global pandemic. Then what is supposed to be called? Didn't the virus originate from China? Such kind of conversations fills up the replies under Trump's tweet. Are we really acting oversensitive or paranoid? Study shows people within the socially devalued group could often identify and define microaggressions well compared to the dominant group. But the scary thing here is that with the everyday influence from the leaders of the dominant group, we, or at least me, do start to question myself on my judgment towards microaggression. I bet you are tired of Trump's tweet, so instead, I'm going to share one of my own stories on the unintentional bias I experienced. At the end of my spring break, the confirmed cases in Massachusetts area continued to grow. After receiving the email from Boston University that all in-person classes were moved online, and meanwhile, hearing from my friend in Northeastern University that their school has already asked them to go home, I finally decided to fly to Seattle, the place where my uncle lives. One of the neighbors of my uncle is a lovely granny, who is always friendly to welcome us if we visit her. However, this time, I was told by my uncle that this granny implicitly asked us not to visit her by saying, I'm hoping to see her on FaceTime. Do I feel offended? Not quite, but I must admit I still feel a little bit weird and uncomfortable, even though I unpurposely booked a business class ticket, which means no one sits next to me, never took off my mask during my flight, and quickly bathed myself as soon as I arrived home. I still know there's a chance that I might get the disease, I clearly understand she was keeping social distance, which is the right choice under this pandemic, until I got to know from my uncle. The son of this granny recently was diagnosed with a gut problem, and she went to the hospital without wearing masks every time with her son. And even my uncle hasn't kept in touch with this granny for a long time. So now the story becomes tricky. Am I oversensitive or paranoid? I would love to think more simply that she's doing something right and proper in this particular time, but still, her action can be seen as what is called aversive racism, which refers to an insidious and thus conspicuous form of racism that hides in assumptions, beliefs, values of well-intended people, and is difficult to identify in its motivational manifestations. Honestly, I would rather she said it clear, like, "Well, I go to hospital regularly, and you just came off from a 6-hour flight. Both of us are under the risk of getting COVID-19, so why don't we do what CDC suggests? Let's keep social distancing. How about we use FaceTime instead of reaching to each other's home?" But instead, what she really does made me feel like she's being welcome on the surface level, but implicitly showing no welcome to in-person conversations. However, the point of mentioning aversive racism is not just reminding people about its existence, but also to address the fact that people have unconsciously inherited the cultural biases of their forebears and that of society, which is the cause of aversive racism. The media should definitely take the most significant responsibility for building cultural biases, especially for this COVID-19 pandemic. The controversy exists among China, which is a country with censorship, and the rest of the world, which most of the countries don't have censorship. The information from both sides are never interlinked. As a Chinese student who studies in the US, I am lucky to have the ability to understand information from both sides, but I am also desperate to see how the tension between China and the world, especially the US, got tighter and tighter due to the misleading and one-sided biased information from the media of both sides. I would like to recall your memory for John Cho's article I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast. It is an article posted on Los Angeles Times, but my first glimpse of this article was on Weibo, which is a Chinese version of Twitter. It was translated into Chinese, and I remembered one of the comments down below really got me related. Well, she commented in Chinese, and I'm now translating it into English. So she said, "Now people who are inside the wall," so here wall refers to the censorship in China, "are sick of people who are outside the wall, and people who are outside the wall are sick of people who are inside the wall. However, both sides know who stirs up fights in the media. Then why don't we stop even we see the media is messing up with the truth?" That's because those in power do not need to understand these empowered groups to survive or do well, while those without much power must actively discern the mindset and motives of these with power in order to survive. Every time the dominant group minimizes the harm after microaggressive action, they claim you are acting too sensitive, and they encourage you to let it go and get over it. Gradually, the socially devalued group loses its voices, but the problem still exists and becomes even worse. I've seen people who are in socially devalued group revenge back with their hatred against the dominant group. The result will be people who used to experience microaggression become the ones who carry out microaggression towards another group. With no voice, no action taken, people are losing part of their humanity. They take pleasure in others' misfortune instead of being empathy for patients. Instead of getting together to fight back COVID-19, they are more persistent in finding the real origin of the virus to either get rid of microaggression or have a proper reason to carry out microaggression by blaming each other for taking the full responsibility of the virus. So I would again bring out the main idea suggested in Zhang Chou's article: stand up for your group, your community. Never keep silent to minimize the harm or hatred. Do something. When you witness a hate crime, do something. When you hear some assaulted words, do something. When you sense anything in your family, do something.